Welcome to the Brown County Hour.
Coming to you from the legendary hills of Brown,
where the plum purple haze,
the one nature herself drapes over the hills and hollers,
inspires local characters, artists, and nature lovers.
It's as though the hills themselves conspire to create a beauty and culture in the heart of Indiana.
Sit for a spell and hear the music.
Tall tales.
True stories.
And current goings on.
Brought to you by folks who still know how to sit by a fire in winter.
And swim buck naked in summer.
Welcome to episode 172 of the Brown County Hour. This is Sarah Lytle.
And Dave Seastrom, along with the rest of the crew. This month, our musical guest is Lloyd Wood. Lloyd has a long musical association with Brown County, going back to being in the house band at the old Nashville Opry in the late 70s, and his many years performing at the Red Barn. Along with his sidekick, Ed Davis, they recorded a few country classics and some original songs in our studio.
We have interviews with the author, Celia Latz, and Mark Satter, who shares observations about his career in Hollywood. We have a poem from Gunther Flum, and essays from Jim Eagleman and Dave Seastrom.
Segment one is entirely devoted to our interview with Lloyd Wood. Lloyd is a singer, songwriter, guitarist, and vocal impressionist who was part of the house band for the Little Nashville Opry, where he opened the show for most of the bigger acts in country music in the late 70s and 80s. Later, the Lloyd Wood Show was a popular feature at the Red Barn Jamboree for many years. Lloyd and his sidekick, Ed Davis, performed live in our studio, and this portion of the show includes a collection of his songs.
Well, we're going to start with a song here that actually we wrote on the way up here. On a nice rainy night. Are you ready, Ed? Here we go. Heading to Brown County, that Nashville town. WFHB is where we're bound. Gonna have a good time, play some good old songs. Hope you'll tune us in, clap your hands and sing along. I'm gonna pick now. Singing, you may not like my songs, you may not like the way I play guitar, but you'll love it when I'm gone.
So this is Dave Seastrom, and I'm with the Brown County Hour on WFHB, and this evening we have been treated to an excellent performance by Lloyd Wood and his bass player, Ed Davis. The two of them are obviously longtime friends and absolute characters, and it's just been tremendous.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for coming in. It's raining cats and dogs out there. It's just unbelievable.
We have loved it. I know Ed's had a good time, and I've had a good time. We got to drive back, probably through some water.
But we'll get something to eat in just a little while.
Yeah, Ed said we'll get something to eat, and we'll be all right.
Well, priorities, right? Exactly. Well, you have such a long association with this area. When did you join the house band at the Little Nashville Opera?
I started as a guest star in 1977.
Okay.
And would appear every once in a while as a guest star before a major star opened up for him. And then after about a year, they had some problems, and
they called me and asked me if I would want that job as the MC. And I said, well, you know, I'd love it. I've been kind of working on things like that, you know. So they offered it to me. And I knew a lot of the band members anyway. So started out, and it turned out real good for me. And I really worked hard at it. I wanted to make people laugh. And I would try hard to do such a great job that we're doing better than you paid big money to see this star, but we want to
right.
do a better job if we could. And so the impersonations came in real handy in that respect. You know, who was going to be there Saturday, then I would try to impersonate him on a Friday night and say, hey, you need to come and see, you know.
So did Esther Hamilton own the Opry back in those days?
Yes, Esther and Dwayne.
Okay, yep. That's right.
Yep.
Yeah, I used to bank with Esther at Morgantown State Bank.
Yeah.
Those were different days.
Yeah, they was, you know, certainly different days, you know. Well, country music was different back in those days, you know.
No, you might call it real country music.
Exactly. But, that's what I call that. We were so enthused about learning new songs. There were so many great songs, you know. You just had trouble learning all of them. But and then I started writing some, and that was a great place to try out a song, you know. But just opening for the stars, getting to meet all of them and singing with quite a few of them. And they remembered you when they came back again the next year, you know.
Okay.
And we'd jam with them, and it was fun. Got to know a lot of people.
Well, you must have met absolutely everyone.
You know, I think at that time, yeah, I've got a list of all of them that I met. You know, from George Jones's, Merle Haggard, Waylon Jennings, the people that were popular, you know, and upcoming stars. Loretta Lynn opened two shows with her, three shows. Oak Ridge Boys, the Statler Brothers, Alabama, you know, they just kept new. I was so excited. My first star to be with open up was Eddie Rabbit.
Okay.
And that was a thrill for me because I loved his songs. And so getting to meet all of them, and I would introduce them all. Marty Robbins was always one of my favorites. I did, well, I think, three shows and one up in Greenfield when I moved up there. But I was the MC and brought him out on stage his last, one of his last shows, as a matter of fact, because he died, I think, 1981. Hmm. And I said, Marty, how do you want me to announce you? And he said, just tell him I'm a legend in my own mind. I said, all right, I can do that. He was a great guy.
Yeah.
Great personality. Majority of them were super fine people, easy to work with. And I got to, you know, go in their room and say, hey, I just wrote this. Would you care to listen to it? And they said, yeah, you know. Johnny Page said, son, come in here now. Let's hear that song you got. Earlier in my life, I come from a musical family. I started on mandolin when I was like 5 years old and playing guitar at about the ages 6 and 7. I used to stand in front of the mirror and, you know, try to sound like Elvis. And so I got to where when I'd learn a song, I'd try to learn the voice as I learned the lyrics, you know. So my parents would watch the Ed Sullivan Show, and I'd try to do his voice and then bring Elvis out, you know. You want to try that? All right. And now, see, and now let's hear it for Fantastic Rock and Roll Singer from Troop-A-Lady Troop from Mississippi. Let's hear it for Elvis Presley. You know I can be found every morning long. If you can't come around, at least please telephone. Oh, big girl, your heart is true. Baby, if I made you mad, something I might have said. Please forget the past, oh, the future looks bright ahead. Oh, big girl, your heart is true. Well, what a weather love, baby, it's just you, my mother girl. Let's go find the preacher, and let's both say I do. And then you'll know I love you. And I love you, old big girl. Your heart is true. Well, one or other love,
Maybe this is you, but there's an old big room to a harlot's crew. An old big room to a harlot's crew. Well, one or other long, maybe it is you, but there's an old.
Thank you. Thank you very much. But you know, when you're doing, trying to learn voices, you just have to kind of feel like that person for a while. And so in case you're like Willie Nelson, you need the wig and the whole works, you know. But I'll do a quick Willie here with one of his biggest hit songs.
Maybe I didn't love you quite as good as I could have, and I guess I didn't pay taxes quite as often as I should have. If I made you feel second best, girl, I'm sorry I was blind. You were always on my mind. You were always on my mind. And maybe I didn't hold you all those lonely, lonely times, and I guess I never told you I'm so happy that you're mine. Little things I should have said and done, well, I just never took the time. But you were always on my mind. You were always on my mind. Tell me. Tell me that your sweet love hasn't died, and give me one more chance to keep you satisfied, to keep you satisfied. Little things I should have said and done, well, I just never took the time. But you were always on my mind. You were always on my mind. You were always on my mind. You were always on my mind.
I'm still writing and trying to find the right person to pitch a song to. You never know this day and age what's going to become popular. You know, country has changed. It's kind of hip-hop and rap. And so I'm thinking about writing one called Loving, Hurting, Cheating, Flirting, Drinking, Laughing, Lying, Crying Songs. So.
Well, you know, I love your sense of humor, and
Thank you. I
can tell that that's part of the magic of your entertainment.
Well, it has helped me so much, you know, I'm off stage the same as I am on stage, and I love meeting the people. Matter of fact, I go out into the audience and try to meet the people before the show and say, hey, you got requests? What do you want to hear? I'll write them down in the palm of my hand. So
Ed, you're talking our ear off here. How is it to hang out with this character all the time?
You can just about tell, I believe. He talks about entertaining people. I get one of the best seats in the house. I get to play along with him.
Shotgun.
I get to watch all this. And so it's just an absolute ball to be working with him.
Well, it's been absolutely marvelous to have you here in our studio, live performing, what you do best, and you are very good at it, gentlemen. Thank you so much.
We both appreciate that just a whole bunch, and we'll go home talking about it for sure.
Well, we'll definitely be talking about it here. And oh yeah, do you have something coming up soon?
We're planning a show in July, 4th of July, in Connersville at a campground somewhere up in, I guess it's a pretty popular place. I think Blair Carman, Jerry Lee Lewis impersonator is going to be there. We'll be there on 4th of July. About 6 o'clock is the time for our show. I'm doing a show in Spencer, Indiana, at the Tivoli Theater, July 30th, I think. Yeah, on a Thursday night.
July. Do you have a website? Or
you can go to the Lloydwood Facebook.
Okay.
And there's a lady that takes care of that for me. You can punch it up. She's got all the shows, upcoming shows listed. And, she even plays, you know, a few songs. If like that one we just wrote, she might play that. And we're still having fun at it. And some of the band members have had some rough times with cancer treatment. But they're coming out of it. And we're still a band. And we're hanging in there. You know, it's, as I said, it's a therapy to us, and I don't want to give it up. And as long as the good Lord lets me sing, hey, my wife has asked me, how long are you going to keep singing? I said, if I can get a guitar on a walker, I'm still going to do it.
Well, Lloyd, more power to you.
Thank you.
We have been speaking with Lloyd Wood and bass player Ed Davis for the Brown County Hour on WFHB.
Thank you very much.
Well, here's a Johnny Cash song we'd like to sing for you. You know, when I was a little kid, I used to stand in front of the mirror and try to sound like Johnny Cash and Elvis and all the different people in the Grand Ole Opry. Are you ready, Ed? Well, I taught the weeping willow how to cry, cry, cry. I showed the clouds how to cover up a clear blue sky. But the tears I cried for that woman are gonna flood you big river. But I'm gonna sit right down here till I die. I met her way up in good old Nashville, Indiana. She was sitting there at the ordinary eating a salad and drinking a Coke. I followed her on down to Baton Rouge, Louisiana. But I had to say goodbye and watch her go. Well, get a rhythm. When you get the blues, come on, get a rhythm. When you get the blues, get a rock and roll feeling down in your bones. Foot taps on your shoes and get gone, get a rhythm. When you get the blues. Now country music is where it's at, so grab your boots and your cowboy hat. We're gonna play and sing all night long, and maybe we can sing your favorite song. We're feeling good, did this too, cause WFHB is where we want to be. Get a rhythm. When you get the blues, come on.
Now we pause for station identification.
You are listening to the Brown County Hour on volunteer-powered community radio, WFHB, at 100.7 in Brown County, 91.3 and 98.1 in Bloomington, 106.3 in Ellettsville, and online at wfhb.org.
Support for WFHB comes from Our Brown County, a magazine for locals and visitors featuring art, entertainment, and county characters since 1995. Printed 6 times a year and available online. More information at rbrowncounty.com.
In segment 2, we have a conversation with local author Celia Latz. She talks about her trilogy of books, working to finish the 3rd installment and tales of her world adventures. We'll share updates about the monthly Alpha Gal meeting and the upcoming fingerstyle guitar competition. Gunther Flum has a poem called What If They Came Up and Said. And we'll close with the Lloyd Wood song, Maybe You'll Start Loving Me Again. But first, we'll take you on location to the ribbon-cutting ceremony for the Hoosier Hills Scenic Byway.
Oh, I'm Vivian Wolf, and I'm a member of PVH. A scenic byway gives recognition to the businesses, really, and to the beauty. It's big, really, for the businesses along the way. It's big for the county recognition. And we have little signs, like at the Overlook, and it has a QR code. And if you take a picture of the QR code, it takes you to our website and tells the story about the Overlook. The story is written by the head of the Parks and Rec here in the county. And so we give recognition to the people involved. And it takes people on and off the scenic byway. So that one, the first one, takes you to the Farmhouse Cafe, a business. It takes you to the historic cemetery of Spernica. There's stories in the on our website. And our website is peacefulvalleyheritage.com. And I went to my first meeting regarding the scenic byway, September the 19th, 2017. And PVH has just pushed and prodded. And I give all credit to Christina. When I handed off my files to her, she got it done. And it's a miracle.
Hi, I'm Christina Villani, the Marketing Director with the Brown County Visitor and Conventions Bureau. So today we celebrate the ribbon cutting for the Hoosier Hill Scenic Byway. It's been a project since 2016 with multiple community hands involved across the state. I started this process around 2-3 years ago. Vivian just asked me to take it on alongside NDOT. We were able to put signage across the byway. And that's been my role as far as the Hoosier Hill Scenic Byway and marketing it.
Hi, my name is Jim Schultz, and I'm a past 10-year president of Peaceful Valley Heritage. Peaceful Valley Heritage is started 10 years ago by a group of people in Brown County that were looking to draw attention to our past heritage. And if you looked around the county, around Nashville mostly, you're going to see historic markers. One of them we can see from here. It's right over there. It's the Frank Hohenberger.
My name is Jeremiah Reichman. I'm the sitting president for Peaceful Valley Heritage. Thank you for all the persistent people that stuck with this project. The county, PVH, Kurt, thank you. On behalf of my family and behalf of PVH, I can't be more proud about this project being complete. Thank you.
Matt Rust, Executive Director of the Brown County Convention and Visitors Bureau.
You guys can all lay hands on the scissors.
Oh boy. All right.
1, 2, 3. There you go.
We win.
Wow, I never thought we'd get here.
Everyone.
This is Pam Rader for the Brown County Hour, and I'm happy to interview Celia Latz today. Thank you so much for coming in.
Oh, thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
I learned of the many books you wrote that you're in the midst of a trilogy.
Yes.
Can you tell me a little about that? We already have two, and you're on your third.
I am well into the third, yes.
Now, what is the name of the two that you've written?
Okay, well, the first one was A Song of Love. And it's not a love story, it's universal love. The second one is The Power of the Songbird. And the third one, which will hopefully come out soon, is called A Song Beyond the Sea.
Ha! Huh.
So the word song is in every book because the themes really are about music and the characters that are musicians and how music plays a role.
Okay. And tell us a little about the plot and inspiration,
all
whatever.
Right. Okay. Well, I went to Italy a long time ago to study art. And but actually, I would like to have been a musician, but I turned out writing instead because being a musician just wasn't meant to be for me. But I find that writing has a lot in common with music. And I do use the tools of music making to write my books, timing, even rhythm, arranging the words together to make a melodic flow when you read it, that it sounds good when you're reading it. And I also am a huge opera fan. I love Puccini. So, of course, I love passion and drama. And what better place than to be in Italy, especially Sicily, where this book, both of the books I've written so far, take place.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And I think I got interested in writing these because I've observed often how so many people that are really good people, hardworking people, with great values, get into really difficult situations caused by bad people. Mm-hmm. And so Sicily is a great place for this because there's the mafia there. And my good characters, two of them are musicians. One is a pianist. They're both composers. One is a chef. She owns a trattoria. And the bad guy is a mafia guy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I explore the dynamics of that and see how they work, the good against the bad.
Well, it's pertinent to today's problems.
Yes. As a matter of fact, some of my characters, you might recognize them as major characters in our present day situation.
So you lived in Venice. You still have an apartment there.
I do.
Well, living there off and on for 35 years, you must have a bit of a different perspective when you come back to America.
Yes, there are comparisons, of course, that mm-hmm. I make. You know, food and wine is so important to Italians. I noticed when people get together to have a meal, oftentimes the meal is served and people just start eating and they don't really seem that they're taking time to taste it or to compliment the chef. And that is just a no-no in Italy when you
bad eat. Manners yeah. at the least.
Well, because people sincerely do appreciate good food and are grateful for it, and of course they are here too. But it's just a different difference in attitude.
Mm-hmm. So back to the book process. The whole publication industry has changed a lot. It's kind of a do-it-yourself market now.
Oh, yeah. I know a lot of authors that are turning to self-publication, and that's what I did. I work with Gatekeeper Press. I tried to go through the traditional way to get an agent, and I sent out queries. And I did find an agent that was very interested in my first book, which was a memoir about growing up in Venice. And but then it became so entangled and complicated, and then it just sort of fizzled out. So the thought of going through that whole process again, writing so many queries and not getting responses, and mm-hmm. I just said, forget it, I'm going to do this myself, and I'm glad I did.
Mm-hmm. And how did you go about, because I'm sure there might be listeners who maybe have dreams of,
sure.
You know, how did you go about even finding a good self-publisher?
Because well,
I've heard a lot of bad stories.
Oh, yes. I had a bad experience with one in Bloomington, as a matter of fact. And I felt I was scammed. Anyway, I found a good one through people in Columbus, Ohio, where I was living at the time, who had used the Gatekeeper Press, and they recommended it. And
what's that process like? Do you do your whole manuscript and then send it to them? Do you send parts of it?
You have to have it ready because mm-hmm. it's not really a process where they accompany you through the writing or public. They mm-hmm. just do the nuts and bolts of printing.
How do you go about developing your characters? And well, do they kind of take you over?
They do. The characters are, of course, based on people that I observe, that I've seen, that I'm interested in, the way they act, what they say, their dialect, and all of that. And so they're invented, but they have become real to me. And I just, sometimes when I'm writing, I'm just sitting there waiting for them to tell me something. And then they hear them and I start writing and their dialogue comes out just so naturally because I know them. I knew how they talk.
Uh-huh. So where can we get your books?
You can order them through bookshop.org. And I like that site. I think it's owned by Ann Patchett, who is an author I very much like.
And if someone wanted to get a hold of you, the author.
I have an email address. It's my last name, LATZCE@gmail.com.
Okay. I've been speaking with Celia Latz, and this is Pam Rader for the Brown County Hour. Thanks again so much for coming, Celia. Tell us goodbye in Italian.
Well, grazie a voi di avermi avuto qui e arrivederci a presto.
Oh, beautiful.
Do you live with alpha-gal syndrome or care for someone who does? Join the Alpha-Gal TikTok support group on Tuesday, July 8th at 6 p.m. for a special carry-in gathering at a new location. We'll meet at Harmony Collective, formerly Harmony Church, located at 3999 Mount Liberty Road at the corner of Mount Liberty Road and Bellsville Pike. Bring a favorite Alpha-Gal-friendly dish to share along with the recipe. It's a chance to meet new friends, exchange ideas, discover safe foods, and celebrate something many of us miss, enjoying a meal together. Alpha Gal TikTok, Tuesday, July 8th at 6 p.m. at Harmony Collective, 3999 Mount Liberty Road. Come hungry, bring a dish, and join the conversation.
What if they came up and said, by Gunther Plum, what if a dog came up to you and asked, my friend, how do you do? It's really got to be a drag not to have a tail to wag. Of course, your oldest 2 years young are good at wagging their own tongue, but when it comes to smelling butts, you humans act a little nuts. I think among us, it's agreed, you humans are a different breed. Not to put your species down, but you were born to be the clown. Your funny talk of pure regret, like when you call us dogs a pet. But when a doggy has to go, you'll see how much you humans know. When we have the need to find that spot, you take us anywhere you've got. And so you see who's leading who? Oh, my dear, I thought you knew. Of course we let you call us pet. Look at all the stuff we get. Big warm buildings where we live, all the food you freely give. Yet some of what you have left over really ain't that fit for over, but then you'll pay our doctor bill and do it of your own free will. But it has always been a shock that when we walk you around the block, on shrubs and trees in every yard, you never leave your calling card. All the houses made for us, all the dog food, shows and fuss, from magazines to catalogs, it's all about the life of dogs. Of course we let you keep the cats. Who else will eat the mice and rats? But if we could remind you, please, to wash the cats twice and dust for fleas. And who says we're against the bird? Why, any dog knows that's absurd. I, for one, had parrot twice and found the Latin flavor nice. But when you take us for a walk, you chatter all that human talk to other humans that you meet up the sidewalk, down the street. And all us dogs, we have to wait while you babble and debate. When all you really had to do was lift your leg a foot or two, why, after we have sniffed their dog, you make us stand there like a log. We know by smelling just their butt that we could never trust this mutt. Why, we would rather take a hike or chase that human on a bike or keep the process moving on. There's calling cards on other lawn. So though you try your very best, sometimes you humans are a pest. But here's why we keep you around, because every dog I know has found that all good humans get their day, and some of you get two, they say. We also know you like our bark when in-laws show up after dark, and then how quiet we can keep while you're being robbed and need your sleep. That's why you call us your best friend. Like them, we'll bite you in the end. So to us dogs is quite the puzzle why humans aren't the ones we muzzle. But there are curs of low degree who want to set all humans free. They want to let you off our chain to see how unleashed humans reign. But dogs all know, with chaos spread, that means dogs will go unfed, for who can open all those cans except you humans with your hands? I know if my dog had his way, I think that's likely what he'd say.
The Indiana State Fingerstyle Guitar Festival celebrates its 15th anniversary, July 24th and 25th, in beautiful Brown County, Indiana. The festival begins Friday with a special guitar technique workshop led by internationally acclaimed guitarist Muriel Anderson, followed by the new opening night concert featuring international fingerstyle champion Jack Wilson and performances by festival competitors. On Saturday, acoustic guitarists from around the world will compete at the Brown County Playhouse in the 15th annual Fingerstyle Guitar Competition. The day concludes with an evening concert featuring fingerstyle guitar legend Muriel Anderson, along with special guests Tim Thompson and Jack Wilson. The concert opens with performances by the competition's top three winners. Whether you're a guitarist, music lover, or simply curious, the Indiana Fingerstyle Guitar Festival offers a weekend of artistry, community, and world-class musicianship. More information at indianastringfest.com.
All right, here's a song that I wrote while I was playing at the Little Nashville Opry, and it got quite a bit of play at some of the radio stations. It was the most requested song for a couple weeks until I just got tired of calling it in. And
you got that Lloyd Wood song?
It's called Maybe You'll Start Loving Me Again. You tell me you're leaving, it's over. You say you're walking out today. I won't raise a hand to try and stop you, but would you listen to the words I want to say? Please won't you stay until tomorrow? Give my broken heart a chance to mend. Then when you wake up in the morning, maybe you'll start loving me again. I'm not asking for your pity, and sympathy's not on my mind. But just once more I long to hold you and feel the love that once was mine. Stay until tomorrow. Give my broken heart a chance to mend. Then when you wake up in the morning, maybe you'll start loving me again. Maybe you'll start loving me again.
Now we pause for station identification.
You are listening to the Brown County Hour on volunteer-powered community radio, WFHB, at 100.7 in Brown County, 91.3 and 98.1 in Bloomington, 106.3 in Ellettsville, and online at wfhb.org.
Support for WFHB comes from the Brown County Inn, located just off the main street of Nashville, Indiana, at 51 State Road 46 East. Brown County Inn is also a restaurant, bar, and gathering place for visitors and locals alike. More information at browncountyinn.com.
In our final segment, we'll have an essay from naturalist Jim Eagleman about his summer on the Mississippi. And Dave Seastrom shares a collection of stories about the old Brown County landfill. This show concludes with the Lloyd Wood song, Missing You. But first, we'll listen to our interview with Mark Satter about his time in Hollywood.
Hi, this is Lucy Schultz on Brown County Hour, WFHB. I'm here with a classmate of mine from Brown County High School. I'm here with Mark Satter. Hi, Mark Satter.
Hello, how are you?
Doing well. We're actually sitting outside across the street from Ferguson House Beer Garden. I actually wanted to shine a light on you because you are one of my classmates that I find has had such an interesting life, and you're still linked to Brown County in so many ways. You have a brother that lives here. You had parents that lived here. It is part of you. And I want to know, what have you been up to?
It's interesting.
I've had an original experience when I left Brown County. I left Brown County in 1996 to go to IU. Once there, I wanted to be a painter, but then I wanted to make money, so I switched it to graphic design. And right after 9/11, I went out to Los Angeles because I wanted to do movie covers, CD covers, that type of stuff. And my fiance at the time was an actress. So that led me to Los Angeles, to where I was there for 3 years. But while I was there, graphic design did not become what I was using my art for. I was using my art for spinning stories of the paparazzi and for the rag magazines and news organizations. I had a couple logos that would be on Extra, Entertainment Tonight, stuff like that. So when I left IU, I kind of found myself using my art for different reasons, because I got into the entertainment type paparazzi agency. I would use composition more than anything, what color balance was, where the story was in a photo and stuff like that. And that kind of just was a different exposure to art for me out there, which led into me picking art and selecting art for productions, some movies. I have Mortal Kombat 2 that's coming out. Mm. I helped do production for that. It's it's led to a great time.
Yeah, that's great.
And then I went into kind of like licensing, to where now I work for motion pictures, Warner Brothers, other types of places, and supply them with content that you'll see for background, movie trailers, stuff like that. And that's kind of what I've been doing for the last 5 years, all stemmed from a GT art background that started with Patty Bartels in seventh grade.
Yes, she was very much an inspiration for me also. And she remembers our class as being like really incredible, like changed her life kind of class. I don't know if you know that, but when she told me that, I was like, whoa, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know, for us, for her to have that strong of a memory of our class, like that's solid, you know, being a teacher for over 30 plus years.
So. Yeah. Yeah. I remember when we were in there was a guy who worked for Disney who came in. He was drawing the Darkwing Duck, and he was working on the Goofy series that they had. And he drew on the blackboard, because we were at lunch the only time he was in town. And he just drew the entire Goofy family on the blackboard. And that really made me think that, you know, getting somewhere to do something like that was possible. Now, of course, I was in the entertainment media, which is kind of the butt end of what I wanted to do. But I don't know, I think it's novel enough to be proud of a little bit.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you're, you know, you grew up here. You just the fact that you there's, you know, so many people from our class that are just very talented and just kind of took the bull by the horns and just said, hey, I'm going to go make a life. And I'm super, super proud of you. And I'm proud of our class. And, you know, I think that we should maybe share with our class what we're doing here today.
Oh, our 30th reunion is coming up, and we're going to be doing it on October 10th.
Yes.
2026. And it will be 30 years. I can't believe that.
We're going to post a big flyer, you know, get it all out there. But I just figured we might as well
100%,
shout out.
Well, yeah, we have people coming in from across the country.
Yep.
We're kind of, I mean, in past years, it's kind of been here and there. Rachel Hendershot's done a great job of putting
Amanda
it together.
Bradley.
And Amanda Bradley and everybody, everybody who's involved with that. I don't know. We kind of, being 30, it's kind of a big deal. So
yeah, for sure. Yeah. Well, Brown County, go out and do big things, kids. You can do it. Everybody here, you have a dream, just go follow it, right?
Even if it's following celebrities around to see what's in their trash cans.
All right. Well, this is Lucy Schultz on Brown County Hour, WFHB. Thank you so much, Mark, for being a guest here.
Thank you.
All right, Brown County, Mark Satter and I.
Goodbye.
See you later. Bye.
Years ago, when I was a student at Western Illinois University, I attended the University Field Station one summer there and took, among other things, a class in ichthyology, the study of fishes. Where better to learn about freshwater fishes, I thought, than on the mighty Mississippi River nearby. It was a short distance from the university-owned property. It was to be one of my most influential and exciting classes, and I learned a lot. In a class of about 15 students, we each had a job to do to get the boats into the water, check fuel, equipment, and the life jackets. We drove the Great River Road from the field station to a wide-open public launching ramp. There were 5 students in each of the John boats. These were square-fronted boats with a rail attached to the front of the boat to lean against. With a gas power generator on board, 2 electrodes dangled out in front of the boat. Once in the water, fish that happened to swim into the field of the electrodes would come flopping up out of the surface, momentarily stunned, where we netted them, then passed the full net back to the student in the back of the boat who sat near a tub. The tubs held the fish until we got back to the station where we keyed out and identified all those that we caught that day. To say this was such a foreign and exciting and absolutely new experience for me is an understatement. You never realize what kind of life exists underwater. And when you see a massive river, maybe a mile across to each shore, fast-moving rapids and river traffic of barges and commercial boats you had to watch out for, it was an amazing thing. Then to watch as these strange and ancient-looking fish came up to the surface, many I'd never seen before, large and differently colored, fish like gar and all kinds of suckers and paddlefish and the prehistoric sturgeon, was certainly added to my entire amazement. And I loved every minute of it. One day, after being out several hours, we were loading up and happened to glance over at some commercial fishermen who were coming back from being out all night. They were mostly catching catfish to sell, but also for the private consumption, we were told. My professor, a rather abrupt and serious fellow, sees me looking at the men and says, "Eagleman, go over there and talk to those guys. Find out what they're catching and whatever else you can learn." Then, so as the rest of the class would hear, he added, "As resource management students, you'll most likely be working for them someday, and people like them in your career, they are the resource users," he said. So, being told, I ambled over and saw the fishermen. They were busy loading up, but one fellow was nice enough to talk and answered some of my nearly laughable questions. He had seen our boats out on the water each day and wondered what we were doing. So we had a nice talk, and before leaving, he invited the entire class to his house that night for supper. His wife grew a great garden, he said, with sweet corn and tomatoes. I heard that they had plenty to feed with their six kids, and why not come over and eat some fish with us, he said. The fisherman's property was along a remote river road, and upon arrival, we saw several old refrigerators in the yard, all attached with stovepipes leading from a centrally located large wood stove. This was his smoking operation, and each fridge had shelves of fillets of fish and fish chunks that he would smoke every day, using cherry and apple wood, then use the fish to feed his family. A long picnic table was loaded with the most glorious display of fresh garden produce, sweet corn that was the best ever, and of course the fish baked and pan-fried and grilled to perfection. It was an absolute wonderful feast. We dined on bluegill and catfish and drum and crappie. At one point, he mentioned that maybe we noticed a cedar shingle laying on the coals nearby with a large carp flayed and laying on top of it. Then he promptly picks up the cedar shingle, now burnt and totally black, and announces he will now show us all how a Mississippi River fisherman eats carp. Of course, we were all intrigued and watched as he flung the fish into the coals and then pretend to eat the shingle. He said the carp isn't worth eating, whether you smoke it, fry it, bake it, or boil it. The shingle sure tastes a lot better. We laughed and joked about the story all the way back to the field station. It was a wonderful evening. Our class discussion next day dealt with human relations that we as natural resources would need to be aware of as we encountered them. The public's preference for land use, their requests, in some cases their demands, their biases and user patterns. The professor said the resource user, consumptive, like the fisherman's family we ate supper with last night, or the non-consumptive user, like bird watchers and nature lovers, all have a definite say in how they want their public lands set aside and utilized. How they react will be your greatest challenge, and you won't make everybody happy all the time, he added. I thought back to that fish class many times in my career dealing with the public. It taught me that whatever work we did to improve natural resources, whatever research was conducted, how many talks we gave or asked for input, the surveys and the questionnaires, it all turned out that my ichthyology professor's words were true. The resource user, the hunter, the fisherman, the birder, the mushroom hunter, the state park hiker, the nature lover, all of those we were responsible for. Another segment of Nature Ramblings for the Brown County Hour. I'm Jim Eagleman. Thanks for listening.
My favorite landfill was located in Brown County. For more than a generation, Pat McGuire owned and operated the county dump at his property just off of Railroad Road, outside of Helmsburg. Pat was a strapping 6-foot-something World War II Marine veteran with a square jaw, bulging biceps, and a great sense of humor, once you got to know him. The county dump was at the end of a winding road, and it consisted of little more than a vast hole in the ground that started off as a ravine. The first time I arrived to dump my trash, Pat yelled and cursed at me because I was concerned about backing too close to the abyss in my truck and falling into the hole. It took a while, but eventually Pat and I became friends. A shared sense of humor made the difference. Over the years, Pat's daughter, Bonnie, and his son-in-law, Joe, joined the crew, and we all became friends. There are many funny and not so funny stories about this hole in the ground and the people who frequented this iconic destination. Here are just a few of them. After Pat and I hit it off, he would allow me to pick through the trash and take what I wanted. Often, I would return home with more stuff than I had just thrown away. As the years went by, I accumulated my own mountain of questionable goods. When the time finally came to move to our new house on Possum Trot, I had to pay by the truckload to return most, if not all, of those items to the dump. Friendliness had its advantages. Pat, Bonnie, and Joe loved a good joke. And during those years, I was also working construction, so I always had a fresh supply. Dump fees were arbitrarily assessed by the eye of whoever was working that day, and I discovered that the better the joke was, the less I had to pay. Then there was a time when a group of state inspectors, clipboards in hand, were at the edge of the hole checking out their operation. Their big fancy truck tipped me off, and when I went to the office to pay, I told a very nervous-looking Joe that I'd placed the tainted blood products where he told me to so that nobody would see them. One time, Pat was working alone late at night. Somehow, he rolled the bulldozer and broke both of his legs. Using only his arms, he ever so slowly pulled himself a couple of hundred yards to his house, called the sheriff, and was sitting in a chair on its front porch waiting for them when the ambulance pulled up. He smiled and said, "What the hell took you so long?" A different time, Pat was sitting on his porch one evening, and one of his dogs came up to the house with a dead cobra in its mouth. Pat knew exactly where it came from, and he called the owner of the Serpentarium in Nashville. "Tom, get your forking ass down here right now and get these goddamn snakes out of my dump." When Tom arrived, Pat got in his face and read him the riot act. Rest assured, that was the last time Tom disposed of his dead snakes at the county dump. For several years, I worked as an outside contractor for a local jeweler, Pete Sorer, doing repairs and making castings. One Monday morning, I took a trash bag to the dump and threw it in the hole. I had cleaned my jewelry shop over the weekend, and the bag I tossed contained the trash from my shop. Later, Pete called, saying he couldn't find a certain customer's ring, and did I by chance have it in my shop? I recalled having already given it to him, but I searched my shop anyway and didn't find it. When I called Pete back, he convinced me that that ring must be in my possession. In horror, I realized that it might be in the bag I threw into the dump that morning. Grabbing my rubber boots, I made my way to the landfill right after Brown County State Park had just dumped a weekend's load of trash on top of the heap. Pat took pity on me and allowed me to go in the hole as he scraped layer after layer of trash to the side with his dozer. It was a hotter than hell August afternoon. Between the flies and the stink, I was in misery. Luck was with me, and I eventually discovered what was left of my trash bag. But there was no ring to be found. All in all, we were at it for a couple of hours. When I got back to the house, I called Pete to tell him the bad news, and he replied, I found that ring right after you called. And that, my friends, is the way it goes. This is Dave Seastrom. See you next time.
Ed helps me write a lot of songs. He's great with the lyrics, and sometimes I'll call him up and say, "Hey, I got this idea for a song." And when I wrote this, it was sad, and he said, "Well, there's too many sad songs. Let's make it come out happy." So it starts out kind of sad. Well, actually, it's pitiful when I do it, but it's sad. And it's all about a dream. One, two, three, four. I woke up at 3 o'clock this morning. My pillow soaking wet from the tears I cried. In my dream, you're not by my side. In my dream, you told me you were leaving. You packed your things and headed for the door. As you walked away, I heard you say, I don't love you anymore. Now you're a memory that I need to shake. Just don't know how much longer I can take this missing you, this missing you. I got up and poured myself a cup of coffee. I poured you a cup like I always do, with a touch of cream. Now is this just a dream? Then you walked in and sat down beside me. Asked me how I slept, did I have pleasant dreams? And I said, seeing you now is the only dream I need. You're not a memory that I need to shake. And I know now my heart ain't gonna break from missing you. Missing you. You're not a memory that I need to shake. I know now my heart ain't gonna break from missing you. Missing you.
Thanks for tuning in to episode 172 of the Brown County Hour. This show was recorded in our studio at the History Center here in downtown Nashville and brought to you the first Sunday of every month at 9 a.m. and the following Wednesday at 6 p.m. and anytime online. Be sure to look for us on your favorite streaming services.
The Brown County Hour is brought to you by a diverse group of folks who believe, now more than ever, the world is for everyone.
This show was produced by
Chuck Wills,
Pam Rader,
Rick Fettig,
Vera Grubbs,
Lucy Schultz,
Sarah Lytle,
Chad Carruthers,
and Dave Seastrom. We would also like to thank Slats Klug for our theme music. You have been listening to the Brown County Hour,
coming to you from deep in the woods of Brown County, Indiana.
Celebrating the arts, culture, and nature that make this such a unique community.
Visit us online at browncountyhour.com.
The Brown County Hour is a production of WFHB.
Volunteer-powered, listener-supported community radio for South Central Indiana.
Take me back to my home, Brown County. Home.